Oh, come, let us adore him. In the name of God, amen. In the fall of 1998, I was managing a team in a public relations firm. I was not yet ordained a priest. And one of our clients was a well-known bookseller, one of the big two then selling books in superstores across America. My client that October had launched a website of its own to protect its market share and stock valuation from Amazon.com, then a mere toddler of four. So after the big launch event in New York City, my team settled in for days of phoning business press reporters. Our pitch was simple, and we thought, compelling. This coming Christmas season was to be the first where sizable numbers of consumers would be buying gifts online. Our client would be happy to talk to you about this. I myself was working from a short list my client deemed crucial: Fortune, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, The Economist. These reporters were hard to reach and tended to be skeptical of people like me. So my heart leapt one October morning when I phoned London and a technology reporter from The Economist actually picked up his phone. I told him who I was representing, and he seemed interested. I told him that this Christmas season was to be unlike any other because consumers were beginning to move away from what we were disparagingly calling brick and mortar retail. This Christmas, I remember telling him earnestly, it's all about online retail. Oh, he said, after letting my pitch hang for an excruciating moment of midair instability. Oh, I thought this Christmas was all about the baby Jesus. I can't even tell you tonight what happened next, what I said next, or whether he eventually covered us or not, because his rejoinder knocked me over, embarrassed me into a kind of simper. I was then in my early 30s. I was in the process of excavating my own Christian faith, a faith I'd abandoned almost as soon as I'd been confirmed 20 years before. I was intensely curious about the avowed Christians I was meeting in this very church, in other Episcopal churches in the Boston area. And I was, at the same time, anxious not to be mistaken for one of them. The virgin birth, the resurrection. What could these possibly have to do with me? I thought this Christmas was all about the baby Jesus. Well, of course it is. But what does this baby have to do with us? Why a baby? Why us? These were the questions that were then a private struggle for me. You know, there is the faith you may receive as a child. And no small number of us smash that vessel and need to reassemble it for ourselves and on our own terms. I remember taking a trip to Rome at about this time in my life and visiting the Grand Roman Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore. Under the altar, in a sort of marble grotto, is enshrined wood, said to be the remnants of the actual manger. I knelt down, as one tends to do in such places, but the cynic in me stared at that wood, thought of all the pieces of wood and bone and cloth that once circulated across Europe and the Near East. The cynic in me recalled a statement credited to the 16th century Dutch humanist Erasmus, also a bit of a wag, who suggested that if all of the fragments of the true cross were to be collected, we would have enough wood to build Noah's Ark. So why a baby? And why us? The doubts and the questioning, if I'd been more deeply honest with myself, were not simply the products of a defensive and insecure intellect. They were rather the result of the most anguished and frightened question in the world, on this holy night and on every night. It's the higher power question. If that higher power loves us and seeks us and comes to share in our humanity and redeem it, how do we explain, for example, Herod and the Herods who reign in every human age? Or systemic violence, or racism, or untimely death that is as close, even on this day, as this morning's headlines? Why a baby? And why us? And what's he up to now, if things are such a mess? By way of suggesting a response, I invite you to pause for a moment now on this holy night, to pause and to think about what you know about newborn babies. Maybe you have seen a baby born. Maybe you have borne a baby yourself. But if you haven't, at least you know what a newborn is like. They're all kind of wrinkly. Their eyes are shut tight against that bright light. Their tiny fingers and toes, no bigger than pipe cleaners, curled and clasped. Lungs, no bigger than strawberries. Lungs 4 months full of fluid. And now, just after birth, the sharp cold air is rushing in and they are gasping for their very lives. If you've ever held a baby, you know you have to support their necks. The little plates that comprise their skull caps have not yet knit together, so it's both firm and soft, continent and open sea, frighteningly tender and exposed. Each one of us has lived through that, has been that, even though we don't, thanks be to God, remember it. One of the greatest traumas we have ever endured, birth. So what God would ever choose to do this? What kind of a higher power could this possibly be? Such a strange and surprising God. You know, I have yet to see a nativity scene that captures what had to have been the reality of that birth on this night so long ago. The infants in most of these nativity scenes and paintings look strong, serene. They seem to weigh about 25 pounds. They have thick, full heads of blonde hair. They look old enough to talk. Maybe something in us likes our gods that way, strong and serene. If you remember your Greek mythology, you'll remember that Athena, for example, sprang fully formed from the forehead of Zeus, mature, armored, armed. This baby, born for us, is something else altogether. Not a higher power, but a higher vulnerability. Not a higher power, but a higher vulnerability. And this God above all gods, this fragile, curled, gasping God, will ask us to love him, to love and care for his flesh, and to love and care for all human flesh. So what better way to get our attention? These bands of cloth, swaddling clothes, the very first act of love and care he will experience. Later, he will be baptized. He will be anointed by people who love him with costly ointment. People will have to take him in because he will seem to be homeless, without money or power in the usual sense. His lifeless body will finally be wrapped again in swaddling cloth. It's all about the baby tonight. But why a baby? And why us? What child is this? What kind of a God could this be? What kind of a God can't hold up its own neck? What kind of a God wets itself, spits up? What kind of a God comes to us, not armored and armed, not powerful and serene, but gasping for air, as each one of us did when we were born ourselves? Here's the kind of a God this is. This is a God beyond all mythologizing, beyond every Christmas carol, beyond a manger that may have been wood or may have been stone. This is a God who needs you, who is dependent on you. A God who knows that our world is full of fragile and hurting and gasping people. And this God comes to share all of it and to remind us that it's up to us, to each one of us, to do the swaddling, to do the supporting. This is a God whose very vulnerability will serve to remind each one of us how much love and power we bear, often locked up inside. A God who knows us intimately, who comes here among us as a tiny baby to draw us out and to unlock us. The infant's neediness, his very fragility, will inspire us to lean in and to be changed. And this is a God who believes we are up for, are capable of this very change. It's all about the baby, Jesus. You know, the late British priest, Michael Maine, was on pretty intimate terms with this baby Jesus. Once the Dean of Westminster and a BBC commentator, he had enjoyed a fairly illustrious career in England and was a rather fancy priest. Later in life, he developed an aggressive cancer in his jaw that would eventually take him. Recalling after his diagnosis, all of the hospital visits he had made in his career, all of the praying he had done with others as the well person with the gravely ill. He said that after his diagnosis, that suddenly all of those words he had shared were, quote, finally becoming flesh for him. To speak of God as all-powerful is confusing, he wrote during his treatment. If that conveys a sense of one whose nature is so volatile that he creates floods and earthquakes and tumors because he is angry or displeased with us. This homeless refugee infant was rather, for Maine, a symbol of dislocation and shared vulnerability. Not a higher power, but a higher vulnerability. It's all about the baby, and in an act of divine self-limitation. This is a God who relinquishes control over creation, allowing us, allowing creation and its creatures to be self-creative. As we seek for beauty and goodness and truth, as we struggle to learn the meaning of our stewardship of nature, as we learn the power of reconciliation and the language of love. It's all about the baby. What could be more ordinary and extraordinary all at once than a newborn? Now, a sunset or a mountain vista or the power of the sea may hint to us of God's power, of God's glory, but it's not as if we can model ourselves, can we, on any of the above. It's all about the baby. And the big idea of this holy night is that it takes something as fragile and as commonplace as a defenseless infant to unlock us, to release us, no matter our age, from our exhausting need to win, to possess, to manipulate, to be the center of attention. God knows we have been built for better and for more. It's all about the baby. So, on this holy night, may this higher vulnerability wrapped in swaddling clothes remind you of your own great power to love, to care, to make this exhausted and weary world new. It's all about the baby. So lean in and see and be changed by what you see. Oh, come, let us adore him.